Blog Talk Radio.
Live from the nation's capital, it's Quintessential Listening, Poetry, with host Dr. Michael Anthony Ingram.
My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. I'd like to welcome you to the show. My very special guest tonight is Dee Scribes. Dee, are you with me?
Yes, I'm here.
Fantastic. Do you think that you were meant to be a poet?
That's an interesting question. You know, at times I feel like I wasn't, but as I think back to the probably the first time that I wrote a poem, I'm sure many poets have the same story of being in grade school and you get an assignment and that assignment speaks to you. For me, I was in second grade and the teacher gave an assignment, it was a creative writing contest. And I'm sure it was intended to introduce children to creative writing, and I had no idea what it was, but all of a sudden it was like my spirit jumped or leaped at the chance to enter this contest. And I wasn't sure if I wanted to write a short story or a poem, and I just knew I wanted to do that contest. And I went home and I asked my mother what did she suggest. And she was like, oh, why don't you write a poem about your cat? And I was like, oh, where should I start? And she's like, maybe describe your cat. And I really got into it, and I turned it in, and I won first place at the school.
Oh, wow.
And from that point, yeah, and I won second place in the district. And from that point on, it was kind of like, okay, I know I can kind of write poetry, so maybe this is something that I could do. I've always liked writing, so that started the spark.
All right. Well, a question for you. What is poetry?
To me, poetry is a small space to make a huge impact and to transform the listener. I always feel like a poet's intention is to his or her intention is to transform the reader, to give them fresh perspective, because you can't, as a poet, you can't look at a situation for face value because you're unpacking so much. It's kind of like those one-liners or those two lines that it feels like a person has said a mouthful and they really only giving you two sentences. It's like the punchlines, and those, when they hit the reader, when they hit the listener, it forces the listener to look at it in a different way. And when they change perspective is everything. Sometimes you can't work through something because the perspective, oh, I'm talking to myself now, I guess. You can't work through something because it's based on perspective. It's not really the situation. But when the perspective changed, you're like, wow, I totally see it in a different way. And that's when solutions will reveal themselves.
Oh, wow. That's beautifully, beautifully answered. You know, this is a call-in show, and we've got a caller. Can I put this person on? All right.
Sure.
All
Miss Cayenne.
Miss Cayenne. It's Miss Cayenne. How are you tonight?
I'm well, Dr. Ingram. How are you?
I'm well, too. Do you have a question for the scribes?
I checked in a little bit past the very beginning, so I hope I didn't miss too much. But I was listening to the response to the question, what is poetry? And I guess my question to the poet of the hour is, do you find that in your poetry, you talked about transformation for the listener, but what are your thoughts on the transformation of the creator of the poetry? Is it for the listener only, or is poetry also for the transformation of the creator?
Oh, good question. First of all, hello, Cayenne.
Hello.
It's not only for the listener. I do think that to quote someone that I love very much, that poetry is very cathartic. I think it starts from a place of whatever you're dealing with. It starts from that poet trying to make sense of whatever is happening, even if it's something that they enjoyed. It's the peeling away or dissecting something that they felt, an emotion or a moment in time that they are remembering and they wish they can go back to it. I think that they're working through that space when they write. But when a poet shares a piece, it can't just be for them at that point. At that point is, this is what I've worked through, and this is my experience, and I'm hoping that my experience isn't in vain, but as it freed me with the pen, I'm hoping it frees you with the ear.
Powerful.
That was beautiful.
Awesome.
Beautiful. Any other questions for D-Scribes?
Not right now. I've just been enjoying the the thought process and the rethinking, if you will, of poetry, the poet, and the transformation. So I don't have any questions right now.
All right. Well, thank you for calling in. It's good to hear your voice.
Thank you. Same here.
All right. Now let's take a brief break, and we'll be right back with D-Scribes. We are back. My name is Michael Anthony Ingram. I'd like to welcome you to the program. I'm here with D-Scribes. The call-in number is 646-787-1631. D, will you favor us with a poem?
Sure. I will start with a short piece. It's untitled. I do have like a lot of untitled short pieces. Interestingly enough, a lot of my short pieces are kind of inspired by Facebook. I'm not really sure why I seem to write these pieces quickly on Facebook, but this is probably one that I believe is one that I say from Facebook. Somewhere I was inspired. So here we go.
All right.
I would like to sleep, dream like diamonds, the price is too high to capture, forfeit deep thought, to buy the headband encrusted with the plans of tomorrow. Slumber acts like a one-night stand who wants to hit and run. Let's not exchange numbers. He doesn't plan to return. I long to kiss the lips of rest, fall deeply into his arms with the security of a 9mm fully cocked. But the writer's block is what's loaded, full of aimless muses. Six rounds never hit the head. The dread of Monday comes with its own weapon of chai lattes as bribery to be comfortable in indentured servitude. Pillow eludes the maps to diamonds, so I stay lost in the anguish of being woke. And thank you.
You know, all great writers or performers have great writing influences, and you kind of mentioned there was someone. Who are some of your writing influences, and what makes them great in your eyes?
Writing influences. Probably not necessarily a poet.
Okay.
I probably would say Ralph Ellison. The Invisible Man, the writing is so eloquent. It takes me aback. And it's funny because I find it difficult to work through the book because the writing is so awesome. And I saw a meme the other day that it was like the person having these reactions, one as a reader and one as a writer. And the reader was like, oh, look at these twists and turns, and I can't wait to see what happens. But the writer was talking about the flow and the similes and the metaphors. And when you get caught up in the style and the syntax and the diction, it can just take you away, you know, to where you can't get through because you're examining the skill. So I see myself, that's always like my goal, to get to a place where it flows so easily like that, and it just sweeps someone away. So I'm hoping that one day I reach that.
Well, as you think about that, how does a poem begin for you, with an idea, a form, or an image?
A poem usually starts with a word for me. Sometimes it's like I'll hear a word and I'm like, oh, I like the way that sounds, and then it will form from there. Or maybe a situation. Actually, even with the situation, it goes back to a word that's it, like two words. And if I like the way it sounds, then I will write it down.
Now, do you sit and think through every word of every, or do you just write freely?
It depends. Because sometimes I think I might write with rhythm in mind more than it has to feel right with the rhythm, because I will change a word if it doesn't quite fit my beat, my natural beat, which kind of goes in with the reason why I love hip hop so much. That's another one of my, I feel like, my influences. And I really started liking rap music at 9 years old. I had a cousin who was really into it, and he had all these, I'm sure a lot of young people don't know what cassette tapes are. But he had these boxes and boxes and boxes and boxes of cassette tapes of just rap songs. And I was fascinated first with how much music he had, and then listening, and that probably goes back to that age group where I started writing the poetry, but listening to how they were telling stories in rhyme was so fascinating to me. And then with rhythm, and then it made sense. So I think some of that is in that as well. It's like I like the way the word sounds, and then I like the rhythm of the word.
Oh, wow.
So I let the natural flow happen.
Well, share another piece of work. Share another piece of your work.
Okay, sure. Let's see. This next piece is called NutraSweet 16. 10 years plus six, pivotal moments marked with acquiring driver's licenses, accumulating friends and acquaintances, time spent debating whether or not the chick in the front row outfit has the right label to be included in this populated circle of those who got high school flavor. Maybe her daddy makes paper. Maybe he works for corporate America and he can afford to buy the drop top bins that all the kids say will make her attend. The dime piece that know how to strut her stuff down concrete halls and everybody's enthralled with her appearance. She's got it all, right down to the tips of her acrylic nails and Korean hair, hot pink eyeshadow like her middle name was Brett Dahl. And all the girls want to be just like her. Matter of fact, they want to be her. Envy burning through their veins, right into their hearts, pumping that green emotion through every organ until it hits their stomachs, and they're overwhelmed with the nauseated reality that the only VIP they can be is staring back at them in the mirror saying, dang, I didn't know it was so bad to be me. So who gave them the idea that it would be good to transform robotically into someone else's standard of beauty with too many stipulations in which to adhere? Can't be more than a size 3, but you can't have a big, but you gotta have a big booty. Can't have short hair, but it better not be a weave. Girls look better when they close to Europeans, fair-skinned divas that pass the brown paper bag test. And unless she's given up sacredness, she ain't worthy of being in a man's company. But unfortunately, these maladies can be seen on almost every show on MTV. Women working hard at being famous. And now that I think about it, the abomination is not just on Channel 36, but it also resides in a park on 106, where proper English is the second language, highly educated in Ebonics, and every idea is stamped with the words, you know what I'm saying. Or when they want to sound deep, then it's at the end of the day. Like 800 other people didn't sit in the same seat using the same phrase. So much venom transmitted across airwaves on exactly how to assimilate, to look like the world, look like monkeys on the world stage while the world asks itself, will all teenagers act this way? Will they rise to the call and hear that today's problems be left in their chance for the hands of destruction? But truth's point of view won't be seen through the eyes of the media because in it there's no profit. If only 16 wasn't so NutraSweet, artificially sweetened by the enemy, the battle for souls would come so easily. Wouldn't have to battle so fiercely for the minds of the youth, taken over by video games, shoes with names, tough guy reputations, the wannabe Wayne's, gangs that bang, folks that slain. Between those sweet ears, Jesus would reign, having sovereignty over your thoughts and plans, lifting up hands to God instead of the 12-year-old that got a hold to his older brother's gun, trying to prove that he's more gangster than the rest of the GDs on the nine. Man, I hate to say like my mama used to, but when I was younger, life was more simple. Wasn't afraid to go to school because that day of my life may escape me. Witnessing the crimson red leaving my body from the hole in my head. See, nowadays, you can't wait till you're 45 to become saved, thinking you have all the time in the world because your limbs feel vigor and vim. But with each passing second leaves the moment of witnessing the omnipotent essence. And I can remember not that long ago, a 9-year-old girl was left in the South Side alley for scavengers to prance around her lifeless body, and she was exactly 36 years away from 45. And I wondered, did her mother ever wonder how much time she had left? And I bet she never guessed if her child said the sinner's prayer. See, we have to be aware that our battle is against principalities that try to rob us of our inheritance, young and old, because the soul is ageless, and no matter what your age is, the enemy wants it. The question is, will you let them have it? If only 16 wasn't so NutraSweet, artificially sweetened by the enemy, the battle for souls would come so easily, wouldn't have to battle so fiercely for the minds of the youth, taken over by video games, shoes with names, the tough guy reputations, the wannabe Wayne's, gangs that bang, folks that slain, between those sweet ears, Jesus would reign, having sovereignty over your thoughts and plans, lifting up hands to God instead of the 12-year-old that got a hold to his older brother's gun. And at that moment, you'll wish you and him had given your life up to the him that wouldn't point a gun in your face to see things his way. The only point he does is to the throne with grace and erase your past. Give him a try. He's not a man that he should lie. He's sweeter than any of the things you thought you had to taste. Why have saccharine when you can have the whole sugar cane? Taste God and see he's sweeter than that NutraSweet. Thank you.
Incredible. Incredible.
Thank
you cover
you.
So
Thank
much
you.
Ground in your poem, so many issues. What do you see as being the role of a poet in modern day society?
The role of a poet in modern day society almost seems like a watchman at this time, or maybe not a watchman, but like, for lack of a better term, like Paul Revere, you know, it's like,
okay.
I feel like they sound the alarm. It's interesting to me because I see a lot of conversations nowadays of like, you know, just from social media and different like what's the word I'm looking for? Political statements, et cetera, that are more prevalent nowadays.
All
but
right.
It's right around the time that I probably started going to clubs and watching people perform, et cetera. It's like these things I've been hearing for over 30 years, perhaps, of the perspective, the looking at politics, looking at the government, examining how people interact with each other, how people are focused on brand names, how they don't relate to one another, there's no unity, et cetera, et cetera. Poets have paid attention to the changes in society constantly, and I think they're always sounding the alarm. But oftentimes people, it's like once you get used to an alarm going off, going off, going off, you kind of ignore it until it's your time to get up. And I think... it's your time to get up. You know, you can't ignore it. It's your time. So now it's like the echo is it's happening everywhere. And that's one of the things that I love is that I feel like poets are always examining and always feeling the anguish. And they're like, hey, do you see what's going on? You know, so I would call them the alarm.
Oh, wow. Again, incredible. I loved your answer. Have you ever been published? Have you ever been published?
I have been published. I can't remember how many years ago. And I know this sounds bad, but I can't remember the title of the book. It's on my shelf, but it's like Distinguished Children, Scars. It's a long name that it doesn't match. But yes, I have been published in a publication, and actually, I did an article for a newspaper, a local newspaper in the Chicago area.
Oh wow! So if you had were given an opportunity to get published again, and do
yes.
book signings anywhere you wanted, what cities or countries would definitely be on your book tour?
Cities, definitely Chicago because that's my hometown.
All right.
So I would definitely want to do it in Chicago. And I can't think of a bookstore right offhand because what's so crazy is that I used to go to Borders.
Mm-hmm.
When I lived there, Borders, oh my God. I used to go to Borders on State Street, right at the corner across the street from Marshall Field on my way to, I graduated from the University of Illinois, Chicago. And anyone that's from the Chicago area knows that you, from the red line, right on State Street, you can transfer to the blue line, and it'll let you out right at the school. So Borders was my stop every single day. I would get a cup of chai, and I would sit in the window because it was a two-story. So you could mm-hmm. see everything on down the street, over the city, the skyline, everything. It was beautiful. I'll sit in the window and write in my journal. It was awesome. So if I had to think of a place, I would imagine Borders still being there.
Okay.
And I would want to do
All
a
right.
signing there. Yeah, so that's where I would want to go on my book tour. And probably – oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say any countries, any other cities, any countries?
Any other country. Where would I like to go? That's an interesting question. Oh, man, where would I want to sign a book? Maybe, like, I'm like, oh, where would I want to do that? Okay, because I'm always talking about this place, I would say Costa Rica.
Costa Rica.
I would love
Tell me why.
To be, yes. For some reason, my spirit connects Costa Rica to peace. I have no idea why, but in my mind, I envision peace of mind, and I see me signing books like near the beach, and the breeze is blowing, and I can smell the sea, and I'm in a flowy dress and smiling with braids. I have a whole scene.
I see. You'd be great on a commercial for Costa Rica. I mean, you make it seem so magical.
Right. And people are lining up with their drinks, and, you know, and they're like, I'm going to get a drink and a book, you know.
So you'd be set up by the bar. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Let's take a brief break, and we'll be right back. Michael Anthony Ingram. This is Quintessential Listening Poetry. I'm here with the fantastic D Scribes. Will you favor us with another poem, D?
Sure. Okay. So this next piece is called Lost in Vegas. There's a story behind that, but I'll go into that maybe later, but I'll just go ahead and read it. Okay. Digital communication translate moments in space that serrate the continuum, embedded grooves with unsmooth indentations that mark the veered paths we both taken. Distant sands, Hoover Dam, trapped secrets, semi-completed confessions rest between our pauses and breaths. 20 years in this, and now there's disconnect. Can you hear me? It's me. You remember. Your confidant since 90-something, minus the time where words were silenced but contended to support interlocked ties that bind us, but doesn't, or does it? Did I sail with Odysseus and feast on Lotus, forgetting to move forward in my own journey, thinking I can stay in this place forever? But what is forever? Forever is loss of innocence. It's troubled parents, it's becoming a parent, it's high school, it's college, it's boyfriend, girlfriend, it's just friends, and it's the hopes of returning to lover status. But now we speak in unfamiliar rhythms, staccato, and I have no idea what I should play to make a melody with this beat that beats like the pulse of an asthmatic in duress. Someone quickly ventilate albuterol behind my rib cage of faith so I can breathe virgin air untainted by experience. These murderers, known as memories, always return to relish in my slow death as my mistakes with you kill me inside. I've deprived myself of possibilities with someone else because I keep shooting up with the drug of what could be. But what could it be if it hasn't been? The Walt Disney fairy tale trapped in my head. It's a web. What do I expect you to save me from? 7 deadly dwarfs that hide progress, fear, pain, denial, unhappiness, wholeness, single parenting, loneliness. Your sporadic kisses did not wake me from this foolish double-double toil and trouble spell of slumber that keeps my eyes closed, dreaming in mental myopia, no utopia, just patchwork, double stitch of what remains between us. trying to recreate the warm, thick blanket of unspoken comfort that didn't need to be audible to transcend like Thoreau and Emerson, to flow like ponds on Walden. But every time we press against the window of the past, our breaths fog up the glass. I get close to see what might could be, and I push too hard. The window breaks and the shards cut me. Wrong question, wrong response, wrong time, wrong you, wrong me. Butterflies escape my stomach to flutter near my ears to speak what I think I perceive. Maybe it's something only women can hear. After all, I speak Venetian and you're a Martian. The language is a barrier I haven't learned to navigate in this kind of storm. You say what you mean and do what I like, and I say what you like and do what I mean. The barrier prevents us from meeting in between, in the middle, in half, half of you, half your rib, half your flesh, I can't be. And the promises we made in our teens at 1 a.m. for you to marry me will never be fulfilled. These dreams are more than deferred, they stand still. More invisible than the man Ralph Ellison transcribed across pages that only accept the ink of classics. Pages that only accept where you will be treasured and kept. But where are my pages? I left them on the plane in my seat, lost in Vegas. Thank you.
I will never think about Vegas the same way again. The fountain at the Bellagio will never, I will never think about the city the same way again. How long does it take for you to write a poem?
It depends. I feel like it takes me forever because I go back to that rhythm and repeating it and trying to make sense of it. And sometimes I'm still processing feelings behind something. But the shorter pieces, it probably takes me, like the when I get inspired from Facebook, it probably takes me about 10 minutes to do those.
All right.
Maybe 5 or 10 minutes.
Well, what about your process? Is it pen and paper, computer, notebooks? How do you write?
Pen and paper.
Tell
it is pen and paper. It has to be the right feel, the right pen, the right place to sit. I'm that person, unfortunately. That's a goal of mine, to where you can write no matter what, or you can push through, or you write until you unblock the writer's block. I haven't achieved that yet, so I'm really pushing to be that person that can write in any situation, anywhere, at any time. But at the moment, it's the right kind of lined paper with I like the felt pens.
Okay.
Have the ink has to be kind of thick. I would stop writing if the pen is, like, messed up. I will. It just will turn me off, and I'll put it down. I don't know what that's about, but it's true.
Sounds like a personal problem. But we can discuss that another time. You know, it's funny. All poets, maybe not all poets, many poets have several words that come up over and over again. Words or sentences that they just can't help but use in their work. What are three of your absolute favorite words to use in your work?
Probably skin.
Spin?
Skin. S-K-I-N. I feel like I use that a lot.
Okay.
That's interesting. I never thought about that. Okay. I feel like I use skin over and over, and probably freedom.
Freedom, okay.
I talk about freedom a lot. And probably peace.
Wow. within freedom and peace.
Yes.
Share another poem, please.
Yes. Yeah. Sure. Let's see. This piece is was written for mental health awareness month.
Yes.
And it's called Stoplight. When I lived in the south suburbs of Chicago in Markham, Illinois, me and some neighborhood kids would play green light, red light until the streetlights came on. One of us would stand in the middle of the sidewalk pretending to be the stoplight and yell to these human cars, green light, red light, stop. Green light, red light, stop. All of us trying to be the first to touch the light to win. Touching the light and you win. When did racing to touch the light stop being a game and became a way of life? Running after what seems so easy for everyone but me, continuously stuck at a red light. Do not move, do not pass go, stay here and watch the happy people travel in and out of traffic like NASCAR, racing through green lights at four-way intersections, cringing at the thought that it's not me progressing because I have trouble perceiving the light is really green. Green light vegetation on the first day of spring, 20th of March, the first appearance of the vernal equinox. Days and nights are balanced, calming breezes perfumed with flowers pollinated by buzzing bees with the transparent wings, wings that are defiant and rebellious and protest the laws of physics to carry their heavy bodies to the next flower, filled with nectar, power to go on given by the anther. And I've prayed each day to be sprinkled with that anther, to be given those transparent wings. I wish for them to carry all this weight to the next point, the next blessing, the next job, the next relationship, the next accolade, the next opportunity to feel free. Maybe then I could let transparency carry me, and everyone would look on to see beauty in the moments that steal and crumble comfort and allow me to stand firm in truth, my mind naked and revealing all that I've been through and going through. And yet I still fly. But I'm asking for what seems like I can't do on my own and don't know why. So since I can't go, I stay at this red light and play something else. I line up dominoes and stand them up one after the other. And in this game, I have no need for a partner. Completely capable of lining up each problem, each insult, each moment of rejection, each disappointment, and knock them down with the current challenge, overwhelmed by their sound. The click of the backs of the dotted ivory, a stack of dots but never arrive at a point of perceiving green lights. So I'm here attempting to gather them because now it's not just the red light, it's the dominoes in my pathway. And bystanders feel the need to comment and say, just step over all that's fallen. Get over it. It's the past anyway. It's like asking the blind to just open their eyes. How can I just change my mind when the place that I need to make the choice is creating the thoughts? It's a conundrum of sorts. And of this is still going on at the red light. Eventually a traffic guard come along and notice all the ruckus. She stopped to ask, could she be of some assistance, give instruction, Google Maps, get directions or something, maybe pick up a few pieces of dominoes that fell in the street. She explained she can relate, so no need for me to try to keep the mess everybody can see discreet. That would distract me from focusing on cleaning the quandary before me. I told her I appreciated her taking the time to assist. I'm sure she had her own journey to continue, but she stopped and listened and made suggestions, said maybe an optometrist can help me with my eyes and can change my perception. Depression is like the stoplight that you want to drive through, but too much is going on and it prevents you. It's more than emotion. It's an equal opportunist. No race, religion, color, or creed is immune to it. It's real. You taste it, you feel it, you move through it, but you can't deny it. You pray against it, you reach out to fight it, you breathe through it, and eventually you floor it through the stoplight. Thank you.
I want to stop right here and just take all that in. What do you see as being the relationship between poetry and mental health?
One of the things that I feel that, not I feel, but actually I've seen and heard therapists talk about is journaling. I feel like what happens is with depression, it is having difficulty seeing past where you are at the moment. And journaling sometimes forces your mind to start processing to see further along, or it gives you a place of reflection because it's on black and white, it's on paper. Sometimes people can't see what they're saying. They can't they don't get the fullness of what they're saying until they read back over it. If I tell you this is what you've been saying all along, it's kind of like, oh, no, it goes back to that perception thing. But you can't deny your own words. So when you go back and you look at it, it's you. This is what you said, and this is how you felt. And it kind of gives you a point of reference as well when you do successfully get past that point of depression. It's a place to go back to and say, I thought this before, and I won before. So I will win again. And this is just a moment in time. So I think that writing poetry or writing prose or just journaling in general is very, going back to my word I like to use, freeing.
You're deep. 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 You're deep. You know, they say that to see the world with complete honesty, one should look to comedians, artists, and poets. What do you think emerges naturally from your work? What emerges from you?
Naturally. Struggle.
Struggle? Tell
struggle.
Me.
Struggle. Wanting to make it through challenges has been probably, I can't remember a time that I hadn't had to push through some sort of challenge that was very difficult. Either mentally or something happened around me. And I always have had this this attitude of like, I'm going to beat this. I'm going to win. And once I review like things that I write about, it usually goes to some place of victory, that there's some struggle, but in the end, there's hope, there's possibility. Another poet said something maybe a couple weeks ago that said, difficult doesn't mean impossible. And that resonated with me so much. Kanicki. Said that, and it resonated with me so much, and I think that's something that I constantly write about without even having to think about it, because I was telling my students today, like, I want to see you win. I want to see you do better than I did, your parents, or anybody around you. So always carrying promise and hope is natural for me.
Share another piece of your work.
Okay. In this piece, it's called Selah, and I was challenging myself. I love David from the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
I love the Psalms, and I was challenging myself to write something that could be a chapter in Psalms. Okay.
All right.
Many afflictions try to overpower my visions of aspirations to be more than the lack of encouragement I was given. A child unknowing to my value, but you gave me a glimpse of how it could be through a source unexpected, connected by virtue of what seemed to be a denial of me, a separation from lineage and kinship, But despite being on the edge of emotional bankruptcy, your word paid all my expenses and gave me an overflow of love. Your Holy Spirit descended upon me and filled me with strength like I never had before. You are my Lord, Lord of my life, a counselor like no other. Knowing whatever I say to you is between us, a blanket of trust. There's no me without you, so I must keep your word close to my heart within my spirit. And when you speak, I more than hear it. I feel it deep down in my soul. You are the only one entity, deity that makes me whole. My counselor, oh God, are there enough words in any vernacular in all the earth to describe all that you are, even to those who don't know you? There is nothing that compares to your goodness, your mercy, your patience, your loving kindness, your grace. You are sufficient, an answer to the whys of my life, the one who encouraged me to endure to the end, not just the race, but the marathon, despite the pains and strife. God of all creation, God of all power, Jehovah Jireh, Shalom, Nisi, Rapha, Elyon, Elohim, Yahweh, my God, honor for you emits from my very being. I am compelled to pause and meditate on how to be what you require of me. Saying I love you is still not enough, but I pray the fruit I bear makes you stick out your chest and say, there, my servant, who I am well pleased. With the roar of many oceans and the strength of 1,000 chariots charging toward the enemy, may I answer your call promptly with the words, here I am, send me, hallelujah and Selah. Thank you.
I am not worthy. I am not worthy to be on the phone with you. You're great.
You are a mess.
Hey, I've been doing this a long time, and I know talent when I hear it. Do you perform your work different places?
Yes, I do. I haven't performed in a while because I've been extremely busy, and even trying to write has been a little difficult. But I do perform sometimes at Spirits and Lyrics in Manassas, Virginia. SNL is the shortened version of it. It's every fourth Saturday of every month. At a cafe in Manassas. Also, I think an event is coming up. It's The Gathering.
Yes.
That it will be put on in December. Oh, she's going to kill me because I can't remember exactly the date. I feel like it's December 3rd, but The Gathering, watch out for that. And what is so lovely about that event is that it is a gathering of poets who are getting together to highlight a non-for-profit. And the non-for-profit for this upcoming one will be the Inkwell. And so each gathering is to highlight them and also to get support for the nonprofit.
Right.
So I do tend to perform around, and those are a couple places that you might be able to find me.
Well, as you think about performing, what do you think is the relationship between your speaking voice and your written voice?
Oh, my speaking voice and my written voice. There's definitely a difference. I noticed when I am writing something that I probably want for print, I tend to try to write more flowery.
All right.
I think more about the description, probably more about the imagery for the mind, because the person is reading it. But when I'm speaking and I'm performing it as a spoken word artist, I think I go back to the rhythm and also the emphasis on the connection. I am more focused on the connection and the understanding, because sometimes what the mind can't understand, the spirit and the heart can.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. they don't even need to catch every word because they catch in the feeling.
Yes. You know, as you think about poetry, your body of work. What are some of the most prevalent ingredients that goes into this concoction that we call a poem? What ingredients?
Prevalent.
What do we need?
I would say impact.
Okay.
The desire for impact. The desire for impact will make you analyze what you're writing. The intent, impact and intent, will make you rework it, use certain choices. The diction will become important. Emotion is part of it. So writing something that you connect with. If you don't connect with it, it's a waste.
All right.
It is, honestly, because if you're sitting there listening to it and it's like you see it, you can feel it, it's more a performance than connection and impact. It resonates with the audience different. I would say a grasp of words. You have to love words. Because then the way you put things together, reading, all of that translate into poetry.
Right. You know, what do you think, and then I'll ask you to cite another piece of your work, is the measure of success of a poet? What is
enjoyment.
A measure of success as a poet?
As a poet, enjoyment.
Enjoyment, tell me more about
it. Do it.
Mm-hmm.
I think as long as the love as a poet is still there, that's a success.
Well, share another piece of your success, Miss Successful Person.
all righty. So, you're so funny. Let's see. The last poem, what do we have here? So I think I'll do this poem. It's this one I probably would like more as a written piece.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, why can't I? One moment here. Okay, I would like this probably more as a written piece, but I'm just going to say it anyway. And it is also untitled.
All right.
Okay. She wakes to window shades, slicing the warm sun rays that lay gingerly across her toffee cheeks. Greetings of new mercies inhaled through the nostrils of ticking moments that curse modern sundials. And her eyes drink in daybreak's realities, quenching the thirsty dreams of the night. Her body doesn't speak, no creaks, her bones oration of aging. Only the reverberating vibrations of frequencies that pattern a mind at peace. Gone are worries of yesterday. Available are only the exits from corners she's painted herself in with perception. Exits that lead to where she can be enveloped in the day's possibilities like warm shirling dipped in happiness. Before it is fashioned as a jacket to protect from the elements. A new beginning etched in the sky's horizon as a metaphor that implores her to move forward beyond the pains of empty wishes to be treated better than average, like how she perceives she looks. But today's transformation comes as tips of toes touch hardwood floors, heels quickly follow, feet solidly placed to support limbs to stand strongly on a foundation usually weakened by cynicism, and hope seeps in through the cracks in walls she built with layers of offense and crumbles every stone laid with disappointment, one after the other. It's a new day. For the first time in the longest time, she can envision what tomorrow could be filled with confidence, progress, and self-awareness. There can be freedom, an idea that's consistently eluded her. But today, Paul's epistle gave flame to a flicker, burning in her mind to change direction. Romans 12:2 is its pinnacle, but not to conform, it says, each syllable slowly unbends her mind from around ubiquitous trends and straightens like a two-edged sword that cuts deep, deep into flesh until it tears muscles from cartilage and cartilage from joints and joints from bones until there is nothing left but bare bones, optimal for a resurrection. Something must die in order for it to live again, and all that she's known and learned will breathe into those 206 and become a new creature whose stride mimics a lioness, who protects her dreams like a born cub. Her self-image will be intrinsic. It's a new day. The spirit of fear fears her power now permeating through her skin, no longer hardened by critics or not being enough. Her skin is now a conduit, the moment of metamorphosis. It's a gateway to freedom. It changes the atmosphere. More than just melanin or lack thereof, it's estrogen that permits her to give birth, create nourishment, populate the earth. Has she forgotten who she is? So important that she wasn't formed from dirt, but handcrafted from Adam's rib, valuable steel. There's nothing weak about her choosing submission, but there's wisdom in circumstance to know when. Her identity not printed in the glossy table of contents filled with her bio or glimpses of her steel, but it lies in the creases of individual purpose, and there is where freedom resides. Destiny is the griot who whispers in her ear to remind her that every stumble, every friend, every foe, every argument, every trial or smile challenge works together for her good. Thank you.
Wow. Pitch perfect. You know, some poets are active in other creative areas. What are some of your favorite non-poetry or literature activities? Non-poetry or literature related?
creatively, I like to, actually, I have a accessory business.
And all right, tell us more.
So I sell accessories, not just accessories, but also body care, like body scrub and, soap. And it's called Decor Accessories, DECORE Accessories. And I like to make the advertisements for it. So taking the pictures, setting up the props, and then photoshopping them and putting the words. I like that creative aspect of it. So I find I really enjoy that. So I would be a photographer if I had the opportunity, like the time, that would be the second thing I would do. Yeah.
Wow. Well, one last question, and then I'll let you go.
Okay.
All right. Because we're closing in on 2 minutes. Can you believe it? Okay. We did a whole hour.
I can't believe it. I survived.
You survived.
I did it.
With an A+. As you talk about struggle and then completion and winning. Because
yes.
The race is not to the swift, but to those who persevere. And you persevere
right
through this. When people hear your work, I'm sure they usually want more. What's next for you as a poet?
As a poet, probably publishing my own book eventually. That seems to be what is often suggested to me. And I go, I don't know about that. I know people like to hear me, but I'm not sure if they want to read it.
Oh, they'll read it, all right.
I'm not sure. So I do want to eventually publish a book of poetry. And while I say that's so funny because I said that I want to I have written down in one of my journals that I want to win a Pulitzer Prize. So I know often people don't really say that, but I do. I want to win a Pulitzer Prize.
Hey,
I do.
Who's to say that you can't, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. Especially if I'm writing all this hope and promise, I want to pull it to write.
Well, I'd like to thank you.
Thank you for inviting me.
Well, yes, I've been. For how long have I been trying to find you to work with you?
We are not talking about that.
I knew that I wanted you on the air, and I am so glad that you accepted my invitation. Well, to our listening audience,
thank you so much.
Good night to D Scribes. You touched my heart.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Oh, thank you.
Right.